going, man?
It's going pretty good. So I normally when I talked to you a couple years ago, I was just it was just me, which is kind of strange because in a synchronistic sort of way, but I normally have a co-host and so I just added him to the call, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, but so it was interesting that when I talked to you, we had done the show for so long as a duo that was one of the first times that I ever did it by myself, and so it was interesting that that was like the room 237. Like I had to go into it by myself.
Okay.
Yeah. But so that said, Will, you're here?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so we start the clock, we read the short introduction, and then we go for the 42 minutes. And so I think. And how is LA this evening?
It's good. My wife and son are sleeping in the living room, so I'm talking to you as I walk around the neighborhood. If you hear any unexpected police sirens or neighborhood action, and I also may be a little raspy. I'm just getting over a cold.
Is that from, did you go to Coachella and you were screaming?
Oh yeah.
All right, Douglas, you want me to count down for you, sir?
Yeah.
I mean, if he's got a cold, we don't want him out
Sure.
and about
You're right.
too late.
Okay, so go.
All right, so 5, 4, 3, 2.
Well, thanks, Rodney. That was fun. It went
Sure, good
quick.
to talk to you guys.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, you were saying it feels like a long time. I had a baby in this space that you put out Room 237 and now, and it seems like that time has just been zipping by.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a 4-year-old, and I'm one of the weird, wonderful things about them is they make it clear how quickly time is passing.
Yeah,
When, you know.
my dad once told me you don't even understand how time passes until you have a kid.
Yeah.
Do you
Wow,
start,
do you
yeah.
see your movies as children going away? I mean, you're kind of like you birth them and then they go out into the world and then you have no idea what the hell they're going to do.
I've heard that phrase before. For me, it's almost more of a guilt thing. Like, do you like this one more than the other, or can you make one and not like it? And how cruel is that? Which is also the whole Frankenstein issue. It's the doctor. This it's a story of a irresponsible father who, abandons, his monstrous son.
Right. I mean, that was like the original inspiration for making the Frankenstein movie, right? Was its underlying connotation to being a father in a way?
Well, yeah, that's what Tim said.
How do you feel about that? I mean, was this, I don't know. I mean, I got more questions too about the whole festival here that's going up at the Stanley. When is your film showing?
I think, let's see, festival starts on Thursday night. I think that's May 1st, maybe, or April 30th.
I'm pretty sure
And
May 1st.
Frankenstein.
Yeah, May 1st is on. That's like the. I hate to sound like a nerd, but that's the night that the Avengers open. So I'm pretty sure
Oh.
that's Friday. But
Okay.
when is your show?
So it plays Friday. So, Frankenstein plays Friday at like 4. Nightmare plays, I think, at 9, at like 9:30 or something, and then the nightmare plays again on Saturday, I think, at noon.
Saturday at noon. And can you get tickets to just one show? I think it says that based on
I
pass
think.
type, admission for one is permitted as indicated below. Because otherwise, I mean, it's like a $95 for the entire marathon and I think $295 for like the Big Daddy trip, which is everything.
Yeah, well, you're out in Denver, right?
Yeah. I've been to the Stanley before. That place is kind of creepy, don't you think?
I don't know. I mean, they really embraced their, you know, connection to The Shining. We went on like a ghost tour when we were there. You know, maybe I just wasn't very sensitive, but I didn't get especially creeped out. I thought it was funny looking at, you know, imagining that, you know, that hotel was the one in The Shining and in, you know, the movie. It looks completely isolated, but, you know, if you
Stanley's
just
not.
Turn the camera around, there's like a Burger King about 100
right.
yards down that hill.
Right. Well, it's still really strange. I mean, because you know how old it is, and the Burger King wasn't there in the day.
Yeah.
But I mean, you come around this
little
corner.
Town there.
Yeah, it's really. I mean, it's not a very big town, and you come around this corner, and all of a sudden it opens up because you're kind of going through like some, you know, winding turns or whatever, and then it opens up, and you see this white thing on the side of this mountain, like. It's very stark. You can tell that that's the Stanley. So it almost feels like the place is staring at you, though. But you can't get away from the Burger Kings and stuff. If you go to the pyramids, there's a Taco Bell within view distance.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were in Jerusalem, and, you know, you can be walking down, you know, what's the path of the stations of the cross, you know, and there's, you know, vending machines with ice cream sandwiches and stuff.
All right, so I guess it's pretty late for all of us. We should let you go.
Yeah, I'm still 2 blocks away from my house.
We have a members section now. May we use the after chat as just kind of a members bonus?
Sure, man. I don't think I said anything that I need to keep off the record.
Okay. Well, what is it like? So, like, I'm curious about like working the festival circuit as a filmmaker. Is there like a hierarchy? Like, it seems like Sundance is kind of like the pinnacle of festivals, right?
It's certainly, you know, in the top tier. But, you know, there's also the New York Festival or Tribeca or Telluride, and you know, and then if you go, you know, overseas, Cannes.
Yeah.
But you know, Sundance is a pretty rock solid festival.
Yeah. And you premiered there, and then is it fun to do festivals, or is it like a lot of work?
I have fun. And, you know, especially, you know, this go round, you know, I think in a way has been more fun since, you know, I met a lot of people, you know, last time, you know, so it's kind of like, you know, going back to school after a two or three year long summer break, you know, and seeing some of your friends again.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and there's certainly stress before, you know, your first screening. You know, I was, you know, there's sort of like this, you know, strange spot where it's accepted and, you know, and that's very exciting, but it's still sort of Schrodinger's cat before anybody sees it.
Yeah.
You don't know.
You know, and nowadays... Yeah, is this cat good or does this cat suck? And, you know, with Twitter on everybody's cell phones, that, you know, the instant the movie is over, or sometimes before, you know, people will let the world know.
Well, has anybody ever come up to you and been like, I mean, after you show something like the Mega Mix or anything, it's like, you're fucking crazy, man.
Not to my face. Plenty of people did it.
But then, do you actually create, like, plan to the festivals? If like that's, I mean, it's
plans.
Yeah. So like, all right. So I'm gonna work on this project with the idea that it's gonna kind of, we need to have it in this stage now, you know, at this point, so that it can play here, so that we can get our distribution here, and that maybe it can, you know, take the next step?
Oh, a little bit. Certainly with 237, you know, which was envisioned as an underground movie, that was nothing that we considered. But, you know, when we started, you know, The Nightmare, you know, we got our financing and everything together, you know, in December of last year. You know, so we were like, if we have our act together and we can get this thing, you know, screenable in about a year, we can, you know, submit to Sundance and cross our fingers. You know, so, you know, I think somebody, one part of the team was hoping that it'd be done, it would be screenable, you know, in the fall so that they could do it at this, at the Toronto Festival. But, you know, ultimately, the movie's going to get done when it gets done, and there are, you know, fantastic festivals happening, you know, throughout the year.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, and, you know, if we wouldn't have been, you know, close to being finished, you know, you don't finish the movie in February and then say we're going to sit on it for 10 months and hope that we get into Sundance next year.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I know I was just joking a little bit about you making a fiction movie, but seriously, have you ever thought about making a fiction movie?
Oh, sure.
I know,
well,
you that
know, you, made
you made fiction, like, skits. I don't want to say that you've made a whole movie, have you?
No, I haven't. I've never made a narrative feature film, but certainly within my ambitions.
But when people talk about your voice, there is that, I mean, you're doing documentary in such a creative way that it is, it's you can't call it nonfiction.
Well, I'm happy to be blurring those lines.
Yeah.
And I'm happy. And you know, I was delighted when, you know, the moderator who introduced the movie at Sundance, you know, talked about it as, you know, as one of my films, and, you know, in the way that the phrase, and, you know, this is horribly egotistical, but I guess this is an interview with me about my work. God. but I was very happy to hear that the idea of a Rodney Asher film meant something in particular, you know, to people. That, you know, I wouldn't, that, I mean, I think that there are plenty of documentary filmmakers with distinctive voices. I mean, Michael Moore is probably the most famous documentary maker, has a completely distinctive voice. You know, but I'm glad that, you know, there's a relationship between these different projects, you know. And I would want a narrative film that I do to be related to it, you know, at least in attitude, you know, or tone, you know, even if it looks or sounds very different. I mean, the Nightmare, for the most part, looks very different from 237, but I think it has a similar attitude, a similar vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the reviews that I read, they said that there was a real, stylistically, there is a similarity between the narrative, Room 237 and The Nightmare.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm happy to hear it, but yeah, it did look different. I mean, in this one, we had it was like we had to shoot The Shining footage.
right, but that was part of the fun of The Nightmares. What I read was that,
oh yeah,
all the live action stuff that you were shooting.
Yeah, well, I mean, it would have been, you know, very easy for me to have followed it up with, what's really happening in Mulholland Drive? What was Mulholland Drive all about? But that wasn't necessarily the project I wanted to do.
All right, you opened the book. Is Twin Peaks going to happen? Are you a Twin Peaks fan?
Oh, I love Twin Peaks. I hope it happens. I hope the new one happens.
Is it going to happen with David Lynch?
I think so. I mean, I think it's just, you know, all else aside, it's just good business. It's like Twin Peaks with David Lynch frowning off stage. It's not an easy sell.
Are you close to your house? What is? I mean, so let's talk horror films. Like Fire Walk With Me, that is a freaky movie. What are the?
Oh, that's one of the. Oh, totally a horror. It's one of the most frightening movies. It's one of the most horrific movies ever made.
Yeah, I mean, what are the movies that really freaked you out as a kid?
You know, it was a lot of television. You know, there was the Magic Mirror episode of Lost in Space. The Martian Chronicles, that 6-hour miniseries with Rock Hudson.
Wow, really?
Have you seen it like in the last like 20 years?
Well, not in the last 20 years, but I remember seeing that as a kid and it affecting me, but I didn't, you know, for some reason I didn't make the connection of horror. But I mean, that's the one that, from Ray Bradbury's, right? From The Martian.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. You know, in the photography, it looks like Fantasy Island, you know, the Love Boat. But you know, things just go so. It's so bizarre and, you know, reality bending.
It was just strange. That's what I remember. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember as a kid, it was offsetting. Like it made you uneasy. So it's just weird because you kind of rocked my world because I never realized that that was a horror, but it completely is. Like it scared the crap out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were episodes of Fantasy Island that scared the hell out of me. I remember like a guy who was in love with a mermaid and he was on the edge of a cliff and it was pouring rain and there was like a mermaid calling down from the calling up to him from like, you know, these waves crashing over rocks, and she was trying to get him to jump.
Wow. It's weird. Certain things do set in your mind as like frightening when I'm not so sure that they were meant to be. But when you're a kid, like the imagination just runs wild and it kind of like things stick in your head and like just. And they get in there and they become part of your mythology. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like, for sure.
They never leave you.
That goofy episode of Amazing Stories with Mark Hamill.
What happens in that one?
It's the troll tells him to hold on to his childhood belongings forever. Right? And so he becomes this misanthrope with all his toys and stuff out, you know, and time just kind of passes him by.
Oh, that's good. I mean, it's horrible, but it's good.
And then, eventually all this crap that he held on to his whole life eventually is worth millions and millions of dollars. But of course it's not about
he'll never let it go. And it's weird. For some reason, I remember Amazing Stories when I was a kid. And I remember those shows like Monsters and Tales from the Dark Side. I used to love watching those. And when I went to, what was it called? I can't remember. It was some horror convention with Andras Jones one time. We did a video. Rose McGowan was like the special guest, and I did a sync video on her. And then I passed all out these little cards that said, you know, check this out online. And I actually got to meet Rose McGowan for like a quick second and everything. But I remember being at that was like the first convention I had ever been. I love comic books. I love movies and stuff, but I'd never been to a convention. And I go to this convention where it was all horror movies and stuff. And I'd never thought of myself as a horror fan. But all of a sudden I caught myself in the middle of that. And I was like, these are my people. Like, we are all here for the same damn reason. Because there's you go to the movies to feel emotion, and nothing gives you emotion like horror movies. They confuse the shit out of you. They make you feel all kinds of stuff, and they make you feel a little bit guilty afterwards.
There's a three-volume series of books that I want to read. I haven't. It's called what is it? It's The Philosophy of Horror. Have you seen that, Rodney?
I don't know. I don't know that I have. It sounds like that kind of thing I should have.
It's called In the
Shame.
Dust of This Planet, and they've done a couple NPR shows on the guy. I think one on the media and one on Radiolab. But he does a whole philosophical series on the Horror of Philosophy, Volume 1, 2, and 3.
It's not Slavoj Žižek, is it?
No. His name is Eugene Thacker.
Okay.
But I think it embraces a nihilistic philosophy.
I'm guessing that Rodney is home now.
Yeah.
I just made it home. Did the sound, did the sonics change?
Yeah, I could hear like there was a change in air pressure or something. So I found it May 2nd, 12 p.m. at Concert Hall. Select prices is $12 general admission just for this one showing of The Nightmare.
Well, you got to do it, Will.
I think I got to.
Well, of
course. I think
you're
going to make it down there.
Well, I mean, you got to.
Oh, so that's the second show. There's also the one the night before.
Yeah, but the night before, I can't because I'm...
Oh, you're going to see the Avengers. You're going to see the Avengers. I'd be seeing the Avengers, too, if I was home.
Are you kidding me? I'm going to go 2 weekends in a row for the Avengers. But
I'm looking forward to that.
Oh man, Daredevil. Like the thing that's cool about Marvel is it's so representative of how DC and Marvel were presented in the comic books. Like Marvel has this ongoing universe where everything is connected, and DC has a habit of rewriting and rehashing and reformulating and making anew all of their universe. Do you get what I'm saying? So
you know, it's every year they say, all right, now we're going to start again, clean slate,
right.
And from here on it's going to be consistent. And then they immediately freak out and change it again.
Right, and not
and then somebody
says,
oh, remember that one thing from a couple of years ago? That was cool. Let's
right.
That.
Exactly. Yeah. But Marvel's always had this habit of like creating, and I mean, I don't know if you knew Netflix has dropped their Daredevil lately, which is a great idea because they have the forum to do it in a mature setting. And so the words pussy, shit, and all kinds of stuff gets dropped. And it's very bloody. Daredevil is extremely bloody, but it's adhering to, it's not like Christopher Nolan's representation of Daredevil. It's Daredevil. Do you know what I mean? It's not like Ben Affleck Daredevil. And there's all this weird stuff going on with Marvel because different studios own the character rights. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a student of intellectual property disputes.
To say the least. Like, I'm trying to give a demo tape to Bob Dylan here. But yeah, I mean, it's just interesting because they're knocking it out of the park. Marvel is doing it the way that it should be done. And after Captain America 2, I was like, okay, they're not going to fail. So it's pretty certain that Avengers is going to like break records in these upcoming weeks. But this is at noon. Plus, I work the night shift, so making it up to Estes Park after work would be an absolute nightmare. Pun intended, but I could definitely make it there by noon the next day. No problem.
Well, that'd be awesome, man.
Yeah. Are you going to be around? Or are you going to be like, you know, hungover?
I've got no idea what's going to be going on, but I'll be in Colorado until from Thursday night until Sunday afternoon.
Awesome.
All right. Well,
and I will probably be at screenings for my films.
Wow. I mean, I don't know. What's that like, man? I mean, you've been making films for so long, and I know that we talked about the anticipation of releasing stuff like that, but what is it like being known? What is it like being on Netflix and stuff like that? I mean, it's weird because if you Google Rodney Asher and you see your Wikipedia page, I don't know if you've seen your Wikipedia page.
Yes,
it's like one sentence long, and I think that's kind of unfair.
It's fine, you know. You know, I'm happy that I've been able to, you know, do more stuff the last couple of years. But you know, people get used to things pretty quickly. I don't know if my general demeanor, you know, is that much different than it was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago when, you know, I was, you know, just making funny internet shorts.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, what is the ABCs of death too?
That is 26 short films inspired by a letter to the alphabet. I did one that I thought was kind of a funny idea, but when I looked at the other ones, I think the other filmmakers were really like, this is my big shot at making it. And they were younger and hungrier than me, and they just went bananas and produced these insane, wonderful, lurid, over-the-top spectacles. And I made a funny little short that I made a funny little short with one or two gore shots in it.
And then, well, how did you get wrapped up with this whole Andy Kaufman stuff?
At one point, I mean, years ago, I forget, a long time ago now, I was actually going to be doing a fake, you know, sort of conspiracy theory video with a bunch of folks, including Vernon, you know, who does Wonder Shows in and the Hearts You Holler and stuff. And then, you know, that fell apart, but he was producing the Andy Kaufman record, and he'd been working on it for a long time, and I think it was just he needed help, and he knew I was an editor. And he gave me a call. I had 80 hours of Andy Kaufman secret recording sitting on my hard drive.
Were you ever a fan of Andy Kaufman?
Oh, a gigantic fan. I'm a gigantic fan, and I see him as a very inspirational a character.
Yeah. All right, we're going to let you go to bed, and I'm going to go to bed. And it was really a pleasure talking to you again, and we'll be in touch.
Cool. Great to talk to you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much.
See you in Estes Park, Will.
I would love to shake your hand. It would be a pleasure.
All right.
All right, gentlemen.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Good night.